This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Major depression afflicts 1 out of 10 adults. It causes profound and disturbing changes in people, in mood, energy, sleep, appetite, and interests. Many of these patients are unable to function in their work or family life, and suicide is a risk. Treating depression with selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, has been around since the late 1980s, so there is a treatment. But new brain imaging technologies and genetic detective work are rapidly revealing what can cause depression and how best to treat it. In the first of three stories, NPR's Michelle Trudeau explores the science of SSRIs and depression.
This is the sound of a single brain cell firing away, communicating to other brain cells in their language of electrical pulses and chemical squirts. Our 3-pound brains have over 100 billion such nerve cells, each making thousands of connections with other nerve cells. Deciphering the brain's wiring and firing is a massively complex task. Depression researcher Yvette Chalin focuses on a dense cluster of nerve cells in the center of the brain, called the hippocampus, Latin for seahorse, because it looks like one.
The hippocampus is this area that's deep in the brain, and it seems to be very important in forming new memories.
And it's the area implicated in the problems in memory and concentration that many depressed patients experience. So Chalin has studied a group of people who'd had depressive episodes of varying lengths.
Some people had thousands of days depressed, and some people had down to, you know, just 30 days for one episode.
And she took brain imaging scans of these depressed patients, looking specifically at the size of the hippocampus.
What we found was that the more depression you had had, the smaller the volume was.
So the more days of depression, the smaller the hippocampus.
It suggests that perhaps there is a, if not causative, then kind of a smoking gun association that we would want to look into further.
Chalin also found an important protector of the hippocampus, antidepressant medication, such as SSRIs. The more days a patient had been on antidepressants, the less shrinkage of the hippocampus, suggesting that antidepressants are nerve protectors. Psychiatrist Charles Nemiroff from Emory University has added another piece to the depression puzzle, that childhood trauma is a powerful risk factor for developing depression later on in life.
Early untoward life events in the form of either loss of parents early in life, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and neglect of a particularly severe variety is associated with a marked increase in vulnerability for depression.
Because, Nemiroff explains, early life trauma lowers the set point of a person's stress thermostat, making these children super sensitive to future stress and susceptible to depression.
The brain of patients with early life trauma have persistent neurobiological changes that differ from patients who haven't had early life trauma.
Now, Nemiroff is quick to point out that not every person who's had a traumatic childhood becomes depressed later on. This fact intrigued psychiatric researcher Terry Moffat at King's College London.
We were interested in the question of why it is that some individuals who are faced with stressful life events seem to be able to cope with them much better than others can.
Moffat, with colleague Avshalom Caspi and an international team of researchers, has been studying depression down under in New Zealand.
There were 1,000 young people who were born in 1972 and 73 in a town called Dunedin in New Zealand. And these young people have been taking part in research all their lives, right up until their 30s.
Starting when the children were just 3 years old, the researchers meticulously charted family life, traumatic life events, losses, successes, relationships, year by year as the children of Dunedin became adults.
And we were able to diagnose depression as they grew up to ascertain which ones seemed to be vulnerable to depression after life events and which ones seemed to be resilient against depression after they had stressful life events.
And importantly, the researchers also took samples of DNA, the genetic blueprint of each child, looking specifically at a gene called the serotonin transporter gene. This gene helps control the brain chemical serotonin, and is a logical gene to investigate because serotonin is the target of SSRI antidepressants. This gene comes in either a short form or a long form. So by checking whether an individual had inherited the short or long form of the gene, and then looking at the number of stressful life events, the research revealed a remarkable finding, published last year in the journal Science, and considered to be one of the most important discoveries in depression research.
Individuals who were carriers of the short form of the serotonin transporter gene were more likely to respond to life events with a depressive episode.
And of equal significance, the long form of the gene led to the opposite outcome.
The people who had the long version, which we came to think of as a protective version, were no more likely than anyone in the ordinary population to become depressed, even though they might have had four or even five of those serious life events. So they appeared to be protected against depression.
So inheriting either the short or long version of the serotonin transporter gene predicted how each individual's brain and body would react to life stresses, whether depression would take hold. These findings paint a clear picture of the importance of both nature plus nurture, for neither gene type nor severe stress alone triggered depression, but the combination of both more than doubled the risk for becoming clinically depressed. This, Moffitt adds, says something new about how genes work.
This research suggested that genes' effects are not deterministic. They're merely there in order to react to environmental causes of mental disorders.
Neurologist Helen Mayberg agrees.
The emerging data of the importance of your genes, not alone, but in combination with life stressors, is associated with the development of depression is one of the most important findings to lay the groundwork for the next few years in depression.
Mayberg's own research, begun at the University of Toronto and continued now at Emory University, has pointed to another insight about depression, that the brain responds differently to different treatments. She's looking at effects on the brain of antidepressant drugs, SSRIs, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
We chose cognitive behavioral therapy because it's a highly efficacious treatment for major depression. And our goal was to really see how did the brain change with therapy in contrast to our previous studies of how did the brain change on medication.
So first, Mayberg took brain scans of patients while they were in the midst of their depression. Then each patient received cognitive behavioral therapy for several months. When the patients recovered from their depression, Mayberg took more brain scans.
What was striking was that there were brain areas changed by the therapy that we had never identified in any of our previous studies of medication.
The brain scan showed that psychotherapy slowed down the front part of the brain, the thinking part, and speeded up metabolism in the hippocampus, the brain's memory center. In contrast, an SSRI antidepressant worked at the back of the brain and in the primitive brainstem area. So the brain on cognitive behavior therapy looks very different than the brain on SSRI antidepressants. These brain images add visual evidence to other clinical studies, finding that combining both cognitive behavior therapy and SSRI antidepressants together alleviates severe depression more effectively than either treatment alone. Michelle Trudeau, NPR News.
Tomorrow, whether pregnant women with depression should take SSRIs. And if you want to hear brain cells being electrically manipulated, go to npr.org.